Welcome to the third Monkey on My Back podcast. Feed your geek addiction at mombcomics.com, where you'll find news, reviews, and plenty of stupid comic book stuff. Tonight on the podcast, we're going to talk news, a little bit about the new Venom movie in the works, and an end to Dark Reign. We'll focus on our recent trip to BIX, the British International Comic Show, and we'll spin around our spinning orders, and then Nick will shine a spotlight on The Atheist. Well, I thought that went very well, didn't
you? Aside from, yeah, what's a spinning order?
I don't really know, to be honest with you. Spin around our standing order. What did I say?
Spin around our spinning order. It was genius. To be honest, I really unprofessionally opened my can of drink really loudly at the beginning of that.
I think you're allowed to do that. Should we say what brand you're drinking tonight?
I don't know. Are we allowed to?
We're not sponsored by Carlsberg brand tonight. Which is good.
There are other beers available.
But not at such a good price in Bargain Booze on Shirley Road in Southampton. That's Bargain Booze.
£5.50 for 8 cans.
Yeah, for any American listeners, that is actually, that's what, about $10, isn't it? That's a good deal.
That's a good deal.
That's a good deal for so much beer. Okay, so tonight, around the table, we've got Nick.
Hello.
Richard.
Hello.
And that's Nick again. And me, James.
Hello.
And
there we go, that's the intro done. So, number three then, this is the number three, the magic number. This is...
Just a minute.
Actually, three?
Yeah.
Three?
Where's John?
John. Ah! John, I believe, is out on an imaginary date tonight with his imaginary girlfriend, because it's his imaginary first anniversary.
Does it count as an imaginary first anniversary? It's an imaginary girlfriend, but surely the time when he first imagined being with her is an actual real time.
That's right.
The anniversary is real.
Yeah, today's the anniversary of when he first imagined going out with his girlfriend Yoko.
So he's not stalking that girl from Tesco's again?
He's still stalking her. She's real. And I think the restraining order's real.
Right.
But Yoko is a figment of his imagination.
Oh, okay.
So
it's all their fault.
That's right. So I think maybe from all of us, congratulations to John and Yoko, or Anna, as he calls her in his mind.
Congratulations.
Well done. I'm sure he'll be back next week if he's not too tired.
I don't think we went too far there at all.
No, well, you will hear what I say to her when we're not podcasting, to be honest with you. That was quite polite.
You imagine her too. Excellent. Okay, anyway, so pressing on. Normally, we talk about news, don't we?
We do talk about news. Most of the news is going to focus on BIX this week, because it was fun and we want to talk about it. So,
hogs.
Before, a couple of things I think we should probably talk about. On Comic Book Resource, I don't know whether you guys saw this, but Brian Michael Bendis talked about the end of Dark Reign. Mm-hmm. And in December, there's a one-shot comic book which will focus on Norman Osborn and Doctor Doom. It's going to be called The Siege. It's then going to be followed by a four-issue miniseries. And apparently this will signal the end of the Dark Reign. So, how do you guys feel about that? Is that a good thing? Are you pleased to see the end of Dark Reign?
Yeah, well, I don't know about pleased to see the end of it. I think the first one's about the Cabal breaking up, by the looks of things. Obviously, Osborn's been controlling the Marvel Universe, hasn't he? Sort of, and working with the Cabal behind the scenes at the same time. I don't know. I think when Dark Reign's been good, it's been really enjoyable. I think the Punisher's been a real highlight, hasn't it?
I haven't been reading the Punisher. I think the odd issues I've been picking up, as much as I don't really like big event comics and big crossovers and stuff, and as much as I've talked about there not being a status quo in the Marvel Universe at the moment, it is, if they cap it off, I think we'll be able to look back at the last, because it's been since, No More Mutants or Civil War, it's been constant, hasn't it? We'll be able to look back at that starting there, and then ending at Dark Reign, and we'll think that it's some of the best, you know, one of the most impressive experiments or whatever, one of the most impressive comics experiments of mainstream comics.
I think you're right.
I think it's a great idea.
I think if they use this as a chance to bring all of that, as you say, Civil War, Secret Invasion, bring all of that to a head, you're quite right. I think actually I think there's every chance we will look back on it and think it was actually quite enjoyable, even though there's been some controversy with the amount of titles that have been involved in the crossover. But as I say, the good titles have been good, and I've not read poor titles. So.
Do you think that maybe with the Avengers film, Captain America, another Iron Man, a Thor film, that Marvel are taking a bit of a check and thinking, well, hang on a minute, we're going to get a lot of new readers because of the films. Is there an opportunity now to maybe freshen up what we're doing and look at titles that can bring in new people? Because as we've said before, it's quite hard to get into an event. Do you maybe think that's what they might be looking at doing?
I don't know, because the people running Marvel haven't really changed very much, except maybe, well, obviously Disney.
Yeah, it's true.
Disney have taken over, but I don't think this has anything to do with them. I think they've always been moving towards this end game. But if that was a concern, when Iron Man, the film, came out, they wouldn't have been in the middle of the storyline where everybody hated Iron Man and stuff like that. Do you know what I mean? I think, if anything, we've been looking at when the films have been coming out and thinking, well, why the hell aren't they actually making so? Why is it that they're doing and doing films that relate to the status quo of that character, and at the same time there isn't anything like that going on? If somebody watches the film and goes across and buys a comic from a comic shop, they're not going to see anything like that at all.
Yeah.
So I think, I mean, it'd be nice if that's what was happening, but I think if they were going to start paying attention to that, they'd have started doing it a while ago. From listening to the interview, Brian Michael Bendis has come in for a lot of stick, I guess, over the last few years. But from listening to the interview, I got the feeling you can sort of see that they were always vaguely heading towards this. It's maybe not a great thing to do in the mainstream comics, having this one person have these long spanning ideas.
Yeah.
The superhero comics aren't really designed for that sort of thing.
Well, interestingly, we're jumping ahead a little bit, but we're going to talk about Bix later on. But we went to the Marvel panel by, which is the Geek Syndicate guys.
Yeah.
They did a really, really good job. I think it's the new Ant and Dec in the making going on.
Almost undoubtedly.
They were very good. They held the panel together well. But the question actually came up about events. And Andy Diggle said when he signed for Marvel, they have got it all planned out. And it was quite interesting to see, as he found as a writer, that because he knows what's happening, it's giving him an idea to play with. So it's... with all these new writers that are coming in, I think they're calling the list, aren't they? So it's Andy Diggle. Who's the other one? Is it Hickman's part of the list?
Is it Matt Fraction part of
well,
that?
He's certainly
well?
On there. He's certainly there. A lot of him and Hickman, and they're turning up on a lot of the main titles. So I guess they're kind of.
So maybe it's an introduction of the new wave. Give them a bit of a free rein before the next event. Let them make some comics and see what happens.
It's an impressive cast of writers they've got working for them, without a shadow of doubt.
Yeah, let them loose. Let them loose with some stories that they come up with. Let's not be restrained by the events. Let's see what they can come up with. I'm for that, really. I think it's a good thing for me, because I tend to stay clear of the events.
Do you not think people have been talking about, I think you mentioned it as well, that they're kind of saying that this will cap off the events for a while, and it's going to go back to being the normal soap opera sort of approach, which I think is kind of what these comics are formed on, you know, that there'll be an illusion of change. You'll think month by month, you know what you're going to get in those titles, and nothing much changes, but that's good, because that's kind of why you go to Spider-Man comics, so you can have a Peter Parker story and stuff like that. So,
absolutely.
Do you not think they're capping off the events with... trying to cap off the events the last few years with this one, maybe?
Yeah, I guess so. I mean, we're never going to know until it comes out
what
they're going to do.
True.
But wherever you go, there's lots of comic fans saying that it's the event fatigue, isn't it? And I think it's more the fatigue of the fact that it's your wallet that suffers, because comic fans are completists. You know, they like to know everything that's going on with their chosen character. And it's an expensive game, and I think people would prefer it if they just focused on the stories and maybe didn't have to bother with the crossovers and all the other events that are going on.
Yeah.
So, but you just mentioned Spider-Man, so trying another link here.
Oh, is this another smooth monkey segue?
It is.
Here comes the segue.
I'm sure we'll talk about the Siege again nearer the time, because it's piqued all our interest, but this is something else, and it seems to be every week there's news about superhero characters being made into films, probably because Disney now own Marvel. It's to be expected that a lot of the movie companies are pumping, that own the other licences, so I should say.
Just a minute, did you say Disney own Marvel?
What?
Yeah, they do. Have you not heard that?
I'd not heard that. Has that been in the news at all?
When did that happen?
I think that must have happened about a month ago, I think.
You would have thought there'd have been a lot of talk about that, wouldn't you?
Haven't heard a single thing.
Is it passed you by?
It's completely passed me by.
Yeah, Disney have bought Marvel.
Well, I never.
Yeah. Apparently, for £2.50.
Really?
£2.50? Well, yeah. The dollar and pound, that's probably quite a lot.
I think it's $6 billion.
Yeah, I think that's probably about right.
I'm not sure.
Apparently, everyone that works for Marvel gets free tickets to Disneyland, so it's pretty
good
deal,
that's
really.
That's very nice. I went to Disneyland once the teacups were closed. I was very disappointed.
Is there not a size that... Because you're quite a tall, big chap.
I was seven.
Oh, right, okay.
I wasn't 6'3", morbidly obese at that point.
I wouldn't say you're morbid.
I don't know why. I have quite black moods.
Okay, right. Yes, James. Disney bought Marvel.
Well, I'm glad I know now.
Yeah, that's good.
I might blog about that.
Yeah, we should probably blog it. I'm sure some people out there have.
Yeah. You know, we should do characters. We should make one up. What about, I don't know, maybe like, I really like Winnie the Pooh.
The Poonisher.
Oh, that would be a good character.
That'd be a good character if they were taken over by a porn company as well.
That'd be
the Poonisher.
The Poonisher.
I'd watch that film. Anyway.
You totally ambushed him.
You did ambush me. I was going to talk about Venom, but you know what?
No, that's cool.
Absolutely.
But could anyone be bothered? I mean, this is the thing, I guess. Columbia owned the rights to Spider-Man, and Gary Ross, who I hadn't heard of before, but he directed and wrote and produced Seabiscuit, also wrote Big with Tom Hanks.
Mm.
He's just finished rewriting the script to Spider-Man 4, and now he's about to start the script for the Venom film. Now, I imagine, as we said, a lot of this is to do with the fact they want to keep the licences, because from what I understand, and I might be wrong, but as long as they keep making the films, they get to keep the licences.
That sounds about right, yeah.
So, I mean, a Venom film? I mean, I don't really read a lot of Spider-Man.
He's potentially a cinematic character. The way he looks is very, you know, CGI works wonders and that. I didn't see Spider-Man 3, though. So I don't really know how... We're really going for it with the cans today, by the way, listeners.
We need to get drunk to do this. you'll sense that we're getting more and more drunk, and by the end of it, we'll all have a little sing-song, won't we?
I doubt they'll have noticed that in the past.
Almost. If nothing else, there's a reason to go back and listen to the other two podcasts.
Try and work out how much and on what.
Yeah.
Excuse me. Spider-Man 3... I didn't see it. Was Venom a particularly successful... Was Venom in it? I think the black costume was in it.
Trying to remember. I don't really remember a lot about it. He was in it.
Can I be honest with you? I've only seen 15 minutes of Spider-Man 3. This is a running theme, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Superhero films that I've only seen a very small amount of. I think it was Daredevil last week, wasn't it?
Yeah.
And Batman and Robin. And to be honest with you, I only saw a little bit of Spider-Man 3 on a call... news today. It didn't look brilliant, but yeah, Venom was definitely in it. The CGI of Venom was very cool. I think he's a really cool character. I really like Venom.
Mm-hmm.
I think if you do, you could write a cool story. I think it'll be.
But in the comics, is he a hero in the comics?
No, not really.
He's complete badass.
He's one of the Dark Avengers at the moment, of course, isn't he?
As I understand it, and I haven't read the comics that much in the last few years, but the Venom that's in the comics at the moment, who's in the Dark Avengers, is the guy who used to be the Scorpion.
That's it, yeah.
The original Venom was a guy called Eddie Brock, who was a journalist who, blamed Spider-Man for his life being a fucking mess.
He was in the film, that's
it.
Yeah,
and he ended up being taken over by the symbiote. And he apparently, and I only know this because I saw it on the shelf last week, there's apparently a comic called White Venom or something, and he is supposed to be this white version of, I don't mean he's white, both of them are white, they're both of them are Caucasian, But his outfit's white. It looks. It doesn't look as cool.
Do I need a little button here for liberal angst alert?
I don't think you need it. I think we've all got it. So, and so there's him, and there's also Carnage. I don't know what's going on with Carnage. I don't know if he's still about. But the symbiote that became Venom has been in loads of. It's taken over loads of different people and stuff. So
it's a character with nice, straightforward back history. No possible. Problems there for you know no, fans of Venom. You know, it's not
convoluted. I think
convoluted.
It'll be easy to sort through the pick yeah. through the. It'll be fine.
It'll be fine.
It's like all superhero films, though. It could be cool.
Hmm. Yeah.
I'll say no more.
Venom has a tendency to bite people's heads off. I think I'm not sure yeah. how that's going to go over. In a, it's probably yeah. going to be a PG-13 film, won't it? He's got a lot of teeth.
An awful lot, yeah.
Just in case nobody knows what teeth are.
I'd like it because the writer also wrote Big, so if that's, I could bring some of that across into Venom, would that might be quite cool.
That's a great film.
It is a great film. I'm not sure I'd want necessarily the same themes from Big in a Venom film, to be honest with you.
But I suspect there'll be no giant pianos.
That would be charming, though, to see Venom and Spider-Man playing chopsticks on a giant piano. Was that at Macy's, was it? They did that somewhere like that.
Blink, blink. So there we go. That is a little roundup of the news. I think there's going to be a theme with the news. Pretty much every single week there will be a superhero film being made that we're going to have to talk about.
As long as they keep making
We
those
should
focus.
Probably, yeah, as long as they keep making them, I'll go see them. I don't care. I'll definitely go see them. But the big news we want to talk about is... a comic convention we went to, James. Nick didn't go.
Oh, right.
You didn't go.
That's because we didn't invite him, wasn't it?
Yeah. Didn't want to cramp our style, that was it.
That's right.
Yeah. So, where did we go, James? I don't really remember much about it. It was all very hectic.
Well, on the blog, I did
a beautiful
diary with no grammatical errors and no spelling mistakes and no factual errors.
I done wrote it up.
Yeah, I done wrote it up and it was good. I got a B minus for it, which I'm happy with, which is keeping my grade average relatively high. So I was very pleased. It went up on the Friday night. It was a 2-day event, wasn't it? Saturday and a Sunday. But the organisers had sorted out. It was a bash on the Friday night, which we...
The launch party.
That's what I was struggling to extract from my addled brain. Mm. So we went to the launch party. That was very nice. We met some very cool people. We met Brian Talbot, who was very pleasant. Sorry, Nick, you...
I spilled his drink on him at the second or third convention I ever went to.
He told us about that, and he told us to tell you that you're a word that I'm not prepared to use at this point.
Listeners, there's one word we won't use on the podcast, so you can pretty much guess what he was going to call me.
Talbot
didn't tell you that.
He did. He told me to tell you you're a C-bomb.
He doesn't even remember me.
No, he didn't know. But he was a very nice chap. We also met Barry and David from the Geek Syndicate podcast, who you write for, I think, from time to time, do you not?
That's a very generous way of putting it. I look at the game press releases and write them up for them, yes.
Right, which is very nice of you.
They were very supporting, actually. I said about the podcast, and they 300 issues? 300 podcasts, I think, now?
300,000.
3,000 million.
Yeah.
But, as you both know, I've got a bit of a drinking problem when it comes to podcasts, and I tend to get pissed.
Yeah, just the podcast,
nerves.
Isn't it?
Just the podcast, yeah, just the podcast. So I asked him, you know, how did you start? Did you get nerves? Did you drink? He said 50 episodes you had to get drunk to do it. So that's a lot of beer I'm going to be consuming if we're going to go for that long.
We've only got 47 to go now before you can do it sober. That's great.
You were going to try it sober tonight, weren't you?
I was, yeah, but I was walking around here and it's a bit squeaky bum time and I just... Bargain Booze is on my way here, you see. There's actually a shop where we live called Bargain Booze, which I think you mentioned earlier on.
What squeaky bum time means.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Binge Britain.
Yeah. But, love a bit of binge. Everyone's drinking it.
Squeaky bum time, of course, was a theme of the weekend that we won't go into at the moment. So Friday night was cool. There was obviously a launch party. In the Panama Bar in Birmingham. That was lovely. We had a little bit too much to drink, went home a little bit too late, and woke up on the Saturday, went off to the convention, which was nice and close to our hotel, but you don't need to know that. It's not at all interesting, and I don't know why I mentioned it.
We blocked the toilet as well, which we think was the Japanese food.
Richard broke the toilet in our room, so we had to have separate rooms on the second night, which was devastating, because you never got to see that little peekaboo negligee I'd bought.
Oh, and there was me with my gimp outfit. I had the towel all ready, you know.
Why are you rubbing your legs?
Why are you licking your lips? More worryingly.
Why are you trying to kiss me?
Up until the kissing part, they really were doing all of that as well. It's peculiar being in this room sometimes.
So the Saturday was good. Very well organised event. I've got to hand it to the guys that organise it. I forget their names. What's the names of the guys?
That's a very good question. I'm not going to check our website to find out.
Hats off to them. Very well organised. We turned up. There was a queue, as you'd expect, but we were straight in. Got in, got our art that we wanted to get, went to the Marvel panel, which again was done by Geek Syndicate, who did a fantastic job. They did really well. It's Paul Cornell, Andy Diggle, and I forget the other two.
Alan Davis, and I forget who the final guy was because my memory is like a sieve.
Yes, but listen to their podcast because I think it's going to come out this week or next week, where there's actually the Marvel panels there. They did a really, really good job. Quite interesting things coming out, particularly Andy Diggle was asked what's the difference between working for DC and Marvel, and he said someone told him, I can't remember who, that Marvel's just more street.
That's fair.
Do you think that's fair?
I think so. I think Marvel was... Yeah, I think so. Well, Marvel doesn't have a Batman, but DC doesn't have a Luke Cage, so...
Yeah, that's true.
Nobody's as cool as Luke Cage.
I have to sit out this, really, and sort of declare my interest as being a bit of a DC boy, to be perfectly honest with you. I'm all about the Batman and the JLA, to be honest with you. So.
I think that's fair.
Do I get a prize for going this long without saying, to be honest with you, as well?
I'm pretty sure you said it.
Do you think I've already said it?
I'm not sure. I don't know. Have I given you a complex? I didn't mean to give you a complex about it.
It's one of many. You've given me another complex.
Oh, no. I'm sorry. This is what I do. My imaginary girlfriend would tell you that this is something I do. I can't help it. I'm awful.
You've all got imaginary girlfriends, and I've got an all-too-real wife.
Oh.
Hello, darling, by the way, if you listen to this.
Oh, that's lovely.
Dead now.
So back to the Marvel panel.
Just yeah,
it's 70 years of Marvel. Uh-huh. Another quite interesting thing was they were talking about introducing new characters to the Marvel universe and how difficult it is to get books that people haven't heard of, comic books people haven't heard of, out on the shelves and getting people buying them. And Paul Cornell talked about Captain Britain and said maybe if he had set the second arc in America or introduced people from the Marvel Universe, so more well-known characters into Captain Britain, it probably would have sold better. I mean, I keep saying all this, you really should listen to the Geek Syndicate podcast because it's all there. But I thought that was quite interesting because I really enjoyed Captain Britain and I thought it was great, probably because of English, so I enjoyed it a little bit more and I felt a bit of a loyalty towards it. But it ran kind of true, I think. There is this real thing with comic book fans that they're not everybody... But people like their characters, and being open to new characters is a little bit difficult for them.
In the sort of numbers that they need to keep a book afloat at Marvel or DC, that's probably true.
I think, and again, I don't think we should spoil Geek Syndicate's podcast too
much.
Was
it video? Sorry.
I don't think it was, I think it's just going to be an audio podcast. One guy does try to make a point towards the end, is, well, you're not really introducing new characters into your books for us to get used to. Really, you know, for a character to grow on you, I beg your pardon, you know, they need to be in mainstream continuity, be introduced through maybe a Spider-Man title, something like that. And I think he said in the last 25 years, the only character to really make it was going back to what we were talking about before was Venom. Mm. And they're not really introducing that many new characters. But then I'd also question whether they need to introduce an awful lot of new characters. Because both Marvel and DC have an awfully rich heritage to draw on when it comes to characters. And
I've got two things, I think, that I think about that. The first thing is that Paul Cornell's kind of possibly right that if he'd said it in America and had more better-known characters in it, then it would have been successful. But then if he had, it wouldn't have been Captain Britain and the Outsiders. It would have been yet another American team book. And that's not, I mean, I didn't really read it, so I'm not saying, that's not me saying it wouldn't have been the special jewel it was, although apparently it was really, really good. But, I mean, what's the point of having a Captain Britain comic set in, you know what I mean?
I agree. I agree.
So it's a little bit... And they did introduce Blade. Blade hasn't had a successful comic for a while. That's
I didn't read it, but he was very cool in it. But you should definitely listen to the Geek Syndicate podcast. We were there back to the Comic Con. I really, really enjoyed it. What were your highlights, James?
I think, obviously, we met some very interesting people, and I think we should probably name drop a couple of the guys I particularly enjoyed meeting. We had a very satisfying and long conversation with John Higgins, who really, for me, was probably most well-known as being the colourist on The Watchmen, to be honest with you.
What's The Watchmen?
What's The Watchmen?
It is a book. It's very hard to find. I recommend if you go
have
into...
Have they made a film of it?
I'm not sure. Maybe an indie film was made.
It's not the porno. There's a big blue guy with a massive cock. Is that?
Yeah, he is in it. But if you go into your local comic shop, if you ask for Watchmen,
Watchmen,
you may be lucky. They may have a copy still. I don't know, under the counter or something. It didn't sell particularly well at the time.
Is it new?
I'm not sure, to be honest, when it came out. I think this is where my ignorance. Wow. Really comes out, but I knew that he'd been a colourist on that. But he was a really nice guy, very generous with his time. He drew me one of the obscure characters from that book, some raw sharks.
A shark.
He was
sounds retarded.
I know he's called that, but he's a guy with a trilby on. It was very odd.
That looks like a shark.
That looks like a shark underneath his mask. Oh, he was a lovely guy, though. He was really generous with his time, wasn't he?
He was. What was interesting was he talked about a book that he's worked on and 45 other artists and one writer called Andy Ewington, I believe. And the idea is it's one story with 45 different artists. Hopefully we'll talk about it in a future podcast, but it sounds like a really interesting concept. Some great artists working on it, Jock, Sean Phillips, John Higgins himself is working on it as well, so we'll probably talk about it in a future podcast. But I agree with you, John Higgins, really, really nice guy. I'll have to find what this Watchmen book is, or The Watchmen, whatever it is.
It sounds a bit weird.
I'm sure it's a porno.
I read it once a long time ago, and I really recommend if you get an opportunity to read it yourself, it is quite entertaining.
Okay. I don't generally read things myself. I get the help to do it.
Well, we can't all afford help.
And tell me about it. I remembered what I was going to say. The other thing about Captain Britain struggling is I understand why everyone wants to get their book to do well, but there are an awful lot of books. And Marvel and DC are not exactly... It's not like they're not bringing out loads of miniseries and stuff. There was a Fantastic Four mini-series called Fantastic Force or something that was based on some characters who were in a story arc in the Fantastic Four book that weren't even, like... There are an awful lot of books, and people only have a certain amount of money to spend. So it's kind of...
Ultimately, though, books come, books go.
Yeah.
If you enjoy them, read them, keep them, read them again, but accept that not everything can... last for 700, 800 issues, you know. There aren't that many Batmans out there, are there, or Superman and so forth. Going back to our highlights, I think one of my highlights was actually the Cinebook stand that sells, they translate and publish European books.
Oh, right.
So they come out in large A4 format, like Tintin, Asterix, that sort of size. And they had the sort of books that you might expect. I think Clifford's relatively well-known. Lucky Luke, obviously, is very well-known. I picked up a couple of books there, to be honest with you. I've done it again. I should actually have to pay £1 every time I say, to be honest with you.
I could just kick you in the nuts.
Or we could have a competition, couldn't we? For someone to guess how many times I'm going to say it in a certain podcast and maybe give something away, to be honest with you. I really don't know. My innocence.
Got mine. I sold it.
What books? Silly books. I forgot which ones you got, James.
I bought some Blake and Mortimer books, which I was recommended by the writer of another book that I'll talk about in a moment. My favourite, though, was a couple of books called Orbital, which, again, they come in this sort of large sort of A4 format. It's a sci-fi story about a guy whose parents are killed by some Earth isolationists, so about to join this intergalactic council. It's been going for 8,000 years. Obviously, there's people on Earth who don't want to join. They're about to have a referendum, and some terrorists blow up the meeting where this kid's parents are. He becomes an agent of the IDO, I think it is, and he's teamed up with an agent who's a Sanjar, who is an enemy of Earth, basically we're the ignorant, knuckle-dragging idiots of the universe, which I was quite comfortable with, because obviously, like, I suffer with a lot of self-loathing, so I was happy to see Earthlings cast in that role. But the Earthlings have basically fought them almost to extinction. So it's quite a controversial pairing. They're sent off to a mission where some Earthlings who were caught up in the conflict ended up on a moon, belongs to another group of aliens. They want the moon back, and lots of agency and espionage and intrigue ensue. Really, really good books. I enjoyed them a great deal. The story was great. The art's lovely, to be honest with you.
They did really well at the con. We missed the panel, but I believe they had a panel there, didn't
That's
they?
That's right.
And they really were selling out of these books. After James bought it, I wanted to buy it myself, and they'd sold out of the second one, so I left it. But they've got a website, which I'm sure we'll put on the blog. Really recommend you check it out.
That's right. Cine Book, if you want to have a look up, it's C-I-N-E Book, and I think it's .com, but I'd recommend you have a look. There's some great books out there. European books, I think, tend to be somewhat overlooked. I think it's hard to find some good quality, well-translated books as well. I think Cinebook hopefully are changing that. But I really enjoy Orbital. Was a great read. And as I say, there was another artist and writer who recommended some other European books to me. He's clearly been influenced by Tintin, which is one of my favourite European books. I'm sure most people have heard of Tintin.
Who's Tintin?
No, I'm joking. Of course I've heard of Tintin. And the Thompson twins were named after one of
those. Well, the Thompson twins were named after the 1980s band. I think Hergé was a big fan of their music.
Was he?
Yeah, and he came up
with
it.
I always assumed it was the other way around, but that makes more sense.
You would have thought, well, Hergé was a time traveller, wasn't he?
Oh.
Probably.
Those Europeans.
They are wacky. It's their tobacco.
Before you get on to Rainbow Orchard, I just have to... Orchard. I just have to ask Richard, how do you get up and go to the toilet in the middle of podcasts? Because are you not worried you'll miss something? I kind of need to go to the toilet.
I think just go to the toilet, man. I think that's when you've got to go, you've got to go.
This is a marvellous opportunity for us to talk about Nick behind his back like we do with Richard.
Guys, don't say anything good. Okay?
It's highly unlikely with you out of the room we're going to say anything of any consequence whatsoever. Aww. I'm going to talk about the Rainbow Orchid for a little bit, though.
That's the trouble, though. I mean, we're doing this podcast, and hopefully we won't have to get drunk to do future ones, but when you drink beer, you do need to go, and it'll probably be my turn to go in a minute. But I was quite interested, anyway, going back to the book, The Rainbow Orchid, because I hadn't heard of it. But how did you hear about it? Because you made a beeline for him at the con.
That's right. Well, I've been following Garen Ewing, who's the writer and the artist, for a little bit on Twitter anyway. I'm not really sure. It's one of those things, I'm not sure how I heard about it. It's one of those things, I guess someone was talking about it on Twitter, or I read about it on the web. It's The Adventures of Julius Chancer, who's the main character, who essentially works for for want of a better word, an antique dealer. And he is very much like Tintin, to be honest with you. He's a young guy who clearly is set to go on a number of adventures. I've read the book. It is just like reading one of Hergé's books again for the first time. It's lovely. It's set in the 30s. The pace is relatively slow, but it's lovely. The characters develop. It's whimsical, it's charming, it's just a nice book. The art is lovely. He's clearly spent a long time. We were talking to him because Nick hasn't come back in yet, but we've actually got a surprise for Nick and John, haven't we?
We have.
We bought copies.
Neither of them are here, though.
Neither of them are here, so yeah, unfortunately. We'll tell Nick about it in a minute when he comes back, and we've got a big surprise for him. But we were talking to Garen for quite a while because he was signing and illustrating the inside covers. And I think the story, he said he first started working on it 6 years ago. So it's taken until now to see the light of day. So it was obviously a labour of love. But he's been signed to Egmont Publishers. I think this is going to be the first part of a series of three. The next one is out early next year, hopefully. If you enjoy Tintin books, if you like that sort of thing, if you like nice, charming, gentle stories that take time to tell you the story and take a bit of time to develop characters, I can't recommend it highly enough, to be honest with you.
Yay!
It's been an incredibly long... It's amazing that it's taken that long for Volume 1 to come out, because people have been talking about that book for years.
Sure, I think...
Like, they've been slim... like smaller editions of it.
Have you read it?
So, I haven't. I've got one that was I think given away at Bristol a couple of years ago, and I thought it looked gorgeous, but I wasn't sure if I'd be able to get hold of the other issues, and it kind of
would you like a copy? Because we met the wonderful creator, and there you go.
Oh my god. Oh, and you got a sketch and everything.
You've got a sketch.
Yeah, John and it because Garen was there and he was sketching and signing, and we decided, as Nick and John couldn't come with us, we'd get them both a copy of the Rainbow Orchid.
Oh my god, that's an amazing sketch.
So
you,
you're exactly. Winston Attle, because we thought you kind of looked like him, mainly because he's got a beard.
Oh, we took ages to choose the characters we're going to have. We wanted to get characters that kind of look like John and Nick, didn't we? So,
that's lovely. Well, that's a great sketch. Actually.
What's really galling, though, is we were talking to him. We got the sketch done for John. I think we had... was it Scobie, the butler, done for John. So not only is it's a first printing of a brand new book, which I hope is going to be really successful, personally signed by the artist. John, as far as we know, is the only person in the world that has a sketch of Scobie the butler in the front cover. So he really has got a... I'm sorry, I'm afraid he'd done a couple of yours already.
So what you're telling me is that mine isn't as good.
We were at a con, there were lots of men with beards.
We both got Julius, though. I think he did quite a lot of those. But we were very pleased with him. And Garen is, he was a fantastic guy, generous with his time, prepared to talk about his project. And I think we both wish him the best of success, to be honest with you. It's a lovely, lovely book.
Well, thanks, guys.
I think we've spoken enough about books. I'm sure it'll come up. We'll probably name drop again.
And if you want to read about the weekend we had, there is, as I said, there's a blog on the mombcomics.com. There's also pictures of sketches that Richard and I had done by Sean Phillips, Phil Winslade, and the fantastic John McRae.
Fantastic. Very quickly, just going to go through my standing orders today. So going to stop talking about books now. Busy week for me at the comic shop today. They loved me. Went for some stuff I wouldn't usually get. I won't talk about them too much, but I went for... I can't even read that on the title because it's really complicated.
Brother Voodoo.
Dr. Voodoo, sorry. Never heard of him, but I like to try new comics, so I'm going to give that a go. Rick Remender, is it? Same guy that did The Punisher, which I'm enjoying at the moment.
The excellent Punisher.
Strange Tales, because I love a little bit of silliness with my comics. And I think you should take the piss out of superheroes, and Strange Tales does that very well.
Peter Baird.
Some guy called McFarlane, Todd McFarlane, I think.
Never heard of him.
Has done Haunt with some guy called Robert Kirkman. That was out today. Going to give that a go.
Robert Kirkman's great.
Batman and Robin number 5, of course, was out today. Grant Morrison doing it again. Great, can't wait to read that.
Second issue with... Philip Town?
Yeah, second issue there. Daredevil, number 501. This is kind of the official Andy Diggle start to his run. Really looking forward to reading this.
Can I just say about that? I've only had a flick through it. I love the art in there.
Do you notice, though, it just seems to me there's lots of action in this. I don't think there has been any for a while. I know there was on the kind of build-up to the end of Brubaker's run, but I had a quick flick through. There's lots going on, lots of action at long last. Let's see some ninja action.
It looks gorgeous as well.
It does. Again, like I said, I like some silliness with my comics. So, of course, I buy Deadpool because he's very silly. Another one I've been picking up, Final Crisis Aftermath Run. Really behind on this. I picked the first two issues up, enjoyed it, and still picking it up because it's the last one now, and I've got to buy them all. So I'll get round to reading them all in one go. The Boys, of course, because, well, it's The Boys and it's brilliant. Greek Street, because every month it's a new hummus recipe and I can't wait to see what's in this month's issue because I love my hummus. Sweet Tooth, Jeff Lemire, I think he's absolutely brilliant. Really enjoyed The Nobody. That's my first kind of taste of him. So I'm enjoying that. But very quickly, The Criminal, The Sinners, definitely my pick of the week. I spoke last week about Sin City. I really enjoy crime comics, and I've got to say, this is absolutely brilliant. It's Tracy Lawless, who is from one of the other arcs. He basically, there's loads of people sort of, I don't know whether they're mob guys, but there's people being sort of taken out. Three guys, one's a vicar, I forget the other one's a copper, what have you. So
bank cop, isn't he? The other one's a guy who likes to cut people's thumbs off.
That's it, yeah. So Tracy has been hired by his boss, the mafia boss, to find out who's killing them all. Spoiler warning, it ends and you find that it's actually a group of kids that are doing it all.
That's not a very long spoiler. Is it really?
Is it? Yeah, yeah.
Oh, my kids.
It's a load of hoodies.
If you want to hear that spoiler warning again, rewind.
Am I meant to leave a pause with the spoiler warning?
Or something like that.
Something like that. Well, I've spoiled it now.
Spoiler warning, the butler did it.
The butler did it. To be fair, if you bought this, you should have bloody read it by now.
Well, some of us are getting it in trades.
That's true. I've completely spoiled that, and I'm sorry. But I don't know what's going to happen next, and I've just learnt my first podcast lesson. I can't talk anymore.
I think what we don't know, though, is someone's pulling their strings, and who's pulling who's pulling their strings? Who's ordered the hits?
Yeah.
It's the mystery. We don't know that.
Strings on the hoodie.
It is. So it's probably Gerry Anderson.
It's making the little...
Oh, that's right. The so they've got a little... They're
really tiny. Sorry, I didn't mean to.
Very, very quick, but busy week... really enjoyed. Well, going to look forward to reading these over the weekend. What about you, James? What's in your... Well,
I've got The Sinners too, but I got mine for free and had it signed by Sean Phillips because I spent too much money with him.
Ah, yes.
Anyway, this week for me is I bought Wormwood because any book that starts with a masturbating rabbit is all right. In my book, I too have The Boys. I think me throwing them down on the table, that should come across quite nicely.
Yeah, that would be good. It's like anarchy here, it's ridiculous.
I'm loving this. Issue 9 of The Mighty, which started slowly and has built into a really intriguing story about... it's a story really of absolute power corrupting absolutely, I think. It's a good read. If you've not read it so far, I'm not sure if the first trade's out. If it is, get it. It's well worth it. Jamie, I love you. You sneaked Justice League Cry for Justice.
Jamie's the guy in our local comic shop.
Yes.
It's Justice League Cry for Justice, part 4 of 7. I'm going to have to pick up the other three because the art is absolutely outstanding in there. Batman Annual. I love Batman, can't get enough. Daredevil. I too got Batman and Robin. And also, it's part 5 of Liam Moore, John Repian's Sherlock Holmes.
Is that the last one?
It is, yes, the final one. It's The Trial of Sherlock Holmes. It's been a great read. I think it's out in trade very soon. I'm just looking in the back, actually, to see coming soon from Dynamite. It'll be out in trade. If you've not been picking it up in floppy, if you like Sherlock Holmes, old-style mystery books, well worth a read. Excellent. We've gone through ours nice and quickly because we've realised for the last...
really exciting.
Did you enjoy that?
I feel a bit breathless.
Yeah, I feel well, that's because I'm in the company of yourself and Richard, don't I usually feel breathless. Why I feel the need to...
and horny.
...be so erotic with you both on the podcast, God only knows. Cause
if only you knew he sat in naked.
It's quite perplexing.
It is.
It's weak. I wasn't told that I could be naked.
I don't need to be told I can be naked. And if my nakedness intimidates you, then I pity you.
No, I'd have had a shower and a shave if I'd known, and then I too could be...
I would have had a shave, but there's not enough razors in the world.
And you should have trimmed your pubes, because it makes it look bigger.
I am a bit disturbed by pubic hair, that extent.
I don't know how to do that information, to be honest with you, apart from to say, Nick, what was on your standing order this week?
Okay. I got Doctor Voodoo. The reason Doctor Voodoo's happening, Richard did mention this, the reason Doctor Voodoo's happening is because one of the various things that Bendis and co. have done with the Marvel books is Stephen Strange isn't Doctor Strange anymore. He's no longer the Sorcerer Supreme. They passed it over to Brother Voodoo. Now, when Bendis... I get the feeling he came in for a bit of flack when he first turned up in the Avengers, because he kind of wrote him with quite a broad... The way he spoke was quite broad racial stereotype, because he's from, like, New Orleans or somewhere like that. But this is... I mean, I read a few pages of it earlier on, and it's gorgeous art. It's kind of almost Alex Maleev style art, who did Daredevil, Alex Maleev.
He did the Spider-Man... Spider-Woman recently, is that?
Yeah, and he did actually... And, yeah, he did that. So it's, like, kind of similar art, nice... neutral colour scheme and stuff like that. The writing was pretty good, the bit I've read. It was Rick Remender, Richard mentioned. But obviously, we talked about that a little bit. I picked up North 40, latest issue of that. It's North 40 is a great Wildstorm book about this small hick town in America where something very strange has happened. It's like overnight... the place has been cut off from everywhere else, and people have been like demonically possessed, or they develop powers, or all sorts of weird things are happening there. And then it's all to do with somebody reading, these two teenagers reading an incantation, and it's quite interesting to read. First issue was great. Second issue was a little bit flat in a week when I picked up a few flat second issues, actually. But the third issue is great, and it's intriguing to try and work out where it's gone, where it's going to go. It's quite pretty art, and it's quite interesting writing, but he's got a big cast of characters in there. So sometimes you kind of lose track a little bit of what's going on, and I'm hoping that it'll start to consolidate a little bit. I don't know why I'm talking
so
quickly.
That's why
you gave me loads of space.
That's the whole reason I read the Justice League of America, though, because there's always a roll call.
Yeah.
At the beginning, it makes life much easier for someone as stupid as me. I can just keep going back and referring to the roll call at the beginning of the book.
I don't think if you're officially diagnosed with a problem, it really counts as stupid. You're probably all right.
Yeah. Is that okay? Am I vindicated because of my diagnosis?
You've got that letter from the doctor, though, haven't you? Show people when you take your clothes off in public.
I have, and you've seen my certificate.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like that's what I call it anyway.
I told you should get it tattooed on your chest, because then you'd have to... Because the problem is, you don't have your wallet on you when you walk out naked, so if you've got your certificate tattooed on your chest, then problem solved.
Don't you think I'm a bit too hirsute to have a tattoo on my chest?
Fine. People make the effort.
Yeah,
it's
okay.
It's your license to thrill.
It is true. And then, of course, they have to get nice and close to me to see it, which serves my other... Anyway, what's the other book?
I swear to God, we don't rehearse any of this.
Can you tell?
Do you know, I take weeks writing this stuff.
The other comic I picked up this week should really have been in the news as well, because it's quite a big deal. And it turns out I picked it up by mistake. That's a bit of a theme that might be starting to develop over the weeks. Planetary 27, that we've been waiting for probably a few years now. As far as I can tell from the backstory, about why this issue has taken so long to come out, it's basically been a catalogue of people's schedules not quite matching up, and it doesn't seem like it's anybody's fault, but people have been waiting a really long time for this issue. Now, I don't know if you know Planetary, really.
I haven't got a clue.
It's written by Warren Ellis, and it's drawn by John Cassaday. I'm not sure how his name's pronounced. It began as basically, it's set in the Wildstorm universe with Wildcats and all of those other things. But the way it started was kind of like, almost like an X-Files series, but set in like a superhero universe or a universe where those sorts of things happen. So to begin with, for the first seven or eight issues or something, each issue was like a separate investigation. There's an organisation called Planetary, the Planetary Organisation. I'm having to go cast way back into my memory for this. It's an organisation, and they seek out this guy called Elijah Snow, who apparently is an amnesiac, but he has sort of an expertise in investigating things, and they kind of need someone to replace their previous investigator in their team. And although the three main members of Planetary that you see a lot are all superpowered, Elijah Snow has powers over, like, the cold, like snow and ice and stuff like that. And
like storm.
Well, it's very ice-based. It's kind of like the Iceman, actually. That's didn't have to go very far for that one.
I picked the wrong X-Men. I feel crestfallen again.
And Jaquita, I think her name's Jaquita Wagner, is the female in the crew, and she's like super strong and super fast. And then there's a guy called the Drummer, who's this kind of hippie-esque, quite grungy character, but whose powers are all to do with information. And so they investigate things, and it's a lot like the X-Files, but the first 7 or 8 issues, there are things like they go to Hong Kong to investigate the ghost of this Hong Kong cop who wants revenge, and so there's basically a whole story that was only there to really give them a reason to write and draw a guy running around Hong Kong with 2 guns shooting people. And there's one set on an island that's basically Monster Island from the Godzilla, you know, the Japanese Godzilla films and stuff like that. And there's like a thing about Vertigo and John Constantine and all of that stuff. So, and that's how it kind of started. But through those first few issues, it became apparent there was a wider conspiracy going on, and it started getting quite complicated. There's Fantastic Four style characters in there, and each issue was still self-contained, but it all fed more and more into this bigger conspiracy. My mistake in buying number 20, and it was awesome. All of it was awesome. I didn't say that enough. It's all awesome. The mistake, the reason why I shouldn't have picked up number 27 was I saw it on the shelf. I was so shocked to see it on the shelf that I picked it up, forgetting that around 8 or 9 issues before this, I decided I was going to start picking it up in trade paperbacks. So I started trying to read this. I have no idea what is going on. It's got a gorgeous fold-out cover that John Castor has incorporated elements from loads of stories with it. I'm showing it to them.
That is beautiful. It is beautiful. Take it from us.
This is before John Castor did Astonishing X-Men. This was kind of his breakout book. I don't know if you've seen his stuff on Astonishing. He's a great artist. And the art's gorgeous, and as far as I can tell, the writing's fine, but I don't know what's going on. So I'm going to have to wait for the trade paperback. This is just going to sit on my shelf. I don't suppose anyone wants a copy of Planetary. Wait a couple of weeks on eBay. If it sells out, I might sell it. But I did bring along my first graphic novel of Planetary, because if I didn't already have another book to talk about, that would be my spotlight book. But if one of you guys wants to borrow it, it's great. It's gorgeous.
Richard beat me to it, just for you listening at home.
He always does.
And yet again, I'm sat here weeping during the podcast. Naked and weeping.
It's not a pretty recurring,
story. Yeah, as the day I was born.
Yeah, oh dear. Well, you've got something else there, mate, though. I can see, to name drop again, The Atheists.
Oh, yeah. Spotlight book. Obviously, only one of us gets to decide the classic trade for any given period. That's John. He's busy. We've already established that he's off having an imaginary time.
He's busy with his imagination tonight. He's make of that what you will.
Imagination land.
The Imaginarium of Dr. John Monkey.
Dr. John Catalogue Monkey.
Catalogue Monkey, that's it. But we're kind of doing a spotlight. We're taking turns to pick a spotlight book each week. This book, because the guys were talking about John McCrae, and it reminded me of a book I picked up a few months back when our local Forbidden Planet have an ongoing graphic novel sale, and stuff just finds its way into there that's quite peculiar, and I picked it up for ludicrously cheap. It's a book from Desperado, who are a publisher who seem to do quite a lot of really good stuff, but
I should say very much John about. McCrae was at the Birmingham, Birmingham Comic Con.
No, it's the British Comic International.
I'm a big fan, Hitman, and of course he's doing Herogasm at the moment as well. And you actually said about The Atheist, I've not heard of it.
I haven't, until I saw it. And to be honest, it It doesn't really make it clear. I mean, there are no names of creators on the front cover. There is on the spine here, but the main reason I picked it up was because it's got a really striking cover.
I was about to say it is very impactful.
I'm not sure who did the cover, but it's a really striking cover. It's written by Phil Hester, who I know I've seen his name on other stuff, and I think I've enjoyed his work. But it was the cover that made me pick the thing up. And basically, The Atheist is the atheist of the title. There is a little essay in here about why Phil Hester isn't really calling him The Atheist anymore. It was a name they came up with. He's a guy called Antoine Sharp, who's a... He makes it his job. He's pretty much a genius, and he makes it his job to debunk or destroy mysteries. Like, go around the world basically proving why things that are supposed to be paranormal or whatever aren't really paranormal or whatever. And the story starts, this particular story starts with teenagers start behaving in really erratic ways. Teenagers who previously behaved quite well across America are suddenly going on like binges and getting themselves hurt and behaving in very odd ways. And it turns out that when they start to communicate with these teenagers, they work out that they're claiming that they've been possessed by dead people.
Now, that's funny, because I tried that with my parents about when I think I was 15 or 16, when I came home one night drunk. Mm-hmm. And they didn't believe me, but that it works in the context of this book.
You should see, if they'd read this, they might have believed you. And obviously, Anton Sharp isn't having any of it. I'm guessing because your parents didn't either. So I guess they maybe were quite shrewd like him.
Very.
He isn't really having any of it, but he's called in by the government to try and work out what's going on. And it turns out that these people are starting to congregate in this one particular place, and I can't remember where it is. One particular US city, and I can't remember where it is. It's Seattle or somewhere like that. I should have checked.
Would you like one of us to flick through the book and pretend that we
Winnie
know?
Peg. It's Winnie Peg. And these, I mean, what's basically happening, these kids are like banging nails into their heads and stuff. They're literally like killing, they're partying, and in the process of partying, like killing themselves. And it turns out that, I won't go into too much detail, but it turns out something very odd is happening. This chap turns up to talk to Antoine Sharp, who is, I believe claims to be Benjamin Franklin, the president of the ex-president of the United States. And it turns out there is some bigger thing going on. At the same time, Antoine Sharp is paired up with this, I think she's tobacco and... I think she's an ATF agent or something. And there are just... It's brilliantly written. It's quite an interesting story. It's not as complicated as I've made it sound. It's really delivered quite well.
Is it just that? Is there any more after that, or is it just a?
I think the plan is to do more Antoine Sharp stories. Mm. This is an entirely self-contained book, though.
I had a flick through beforehand. The John McCrae art is very, very different. I don't know if it's because it's black and white. Mm. You can colour it in, James, because I know you like to colour your books in.
I do like the colour. I've got special crayons I use for that, actually. They're non-toxic.
But it's you can see it's him, but it's very different to Hitman. It's not so sort of cartoony and sort of jumpy and jumps off the page like it does with Hitman, which I guess is obviously because of the story. It's a lot of darker story.
And I think the script was probably a bit more... probably required a bit more discipline as well. Yeah, I think we talked a little bit about John McCrae before. I really like his artwork, but I think there's quite a broad range of what he does, and I tend to like his art when it's more disciplined and when there's more. It's easier to see what's going on and stuff. Hitman was brilliant, and that's about as far in that direction as I like seeing his art. He did a series called The Demon, I think that was with Garth Ennis, actually, around the same time as Hitman, and that was just too far in the other direction for me. Isn't to say that it wasn't great, I'm sure it was, but I just... he can go very cartoony if he wants to, and very sort of anarchic. I think, you know, his natural tendency is probably towards that quite anarchic style.
I think that's probably evidenced in Herogasm, maybe.
Yeah, maybe. I haven't had a chance to read Herogasm yet, because I'm not up to date with the boys yet, so I kind of want to get up to date with that. But I mean, I just love his art in this. Unfortunately, he isn't in... The book, I think, collects four issues. Yeah, four issues. And the final issue is drawn by a guy called Will Volley, who I hadn't seen before, and his style is really, really good, but completely different from John McRae's style in this.
How does that... I've had a problem. Certainly if it happens in the same issue, I had... Terror Inc., Apocalypse Soon. I was reading and quite enjoying the artist changes for the last four pages of one of the books, which took me out of the story. Does it take you out of the story? Is it jarring?
I think because it's only four chapters, and because each chapter is the way... Obviously, it was single issue, so I think each chapter is... they're not self-contained stories, but it's quite a distinct part of the story. It doesn't matter so much because it's kind of the final sequence in it. Yeah. So it's a very distinct part of the story anyway. I don't think they planned it that way, but I think, you know, it happens with the whole issue. When it happens in the middle of a comic, I mean, unless it's done for a specific effect, like, say, someone has their dream sequences drawn by a different artist, it can work. But if it's obvious that it's just a completely different artist in the final part, it can be jarring. With this, not so much, but I think part of that is because the first three... Because it's only the last quarter of the story and you already kind of just want to see what happens, it works really well. I mean, but the thing is, and I said this about Jonathan Hickman
yeah.
the other week, Phil Hester just throws ideas at this, you know. So even though there's this quite straightforward story... Well, not really straightforward, but this quite distinct story running through the middle of it, he's not afraid to throw away ideas that other people would. At one point, Antoine and his partner go to seek help from somebody that he knows from way back, who's this scientist who I'm not... this grotesque scientist who I believe has developed a way to... He's basically become like a living cancerous brain, and it's I'm not doing the idea justice. It's really
it sounds pretty cool.
I don't know where you'd find it now outside of Amazon, to be honest, because
it's out of print, is it?
I don't know if it's out of print, but
it's hard to find.
Yeah, Forbidden Planet had it for about £3 or £4. So it was obviously a book that didn't do very well for them. They'd ended up getting, like, they'd ordered on a, you know, they didn't know if they were going to be able to sell it, and then they didn't sell it. So it's like the books we were talking about earlier on. And when someone from Marvel, I quite like Paul Cornell actually, but when someone from Marvel says that it's difficult for a new book to get traction in amongst all of the other things, I kind of think, well, but it's actually probably harder for independent books in amongst all of the mainstream books, that all of the main titles. And this is just like... And I didn't know what I was going to get when I picked it up. I picked it up because of the cover. I probably bought it because of the John McRae art and because I hadn't heard of it, and that's an oddity in itself, really. It was quite an unusual find. But I loved it. Absolutely.
We'll get up on the site, we'll take a scan of it, we'll get a couple of pages up, go take a look. It does look gorgeous, the cover does look good, and we'll see if we can find some links to where you can buy it. I'm certainly going to try and have a look for it, because it's John McRae, and I've got some of his art.
I got some of his art. He did me a lovely Punisher.
Yeah, I got a Butcher and Terror from the boys, and a Hitman.
Actually, just want to say, we were chatting to him a bit, good news, I think, if you're a fan of his art on Herogasm, I think he's going to pick up the art from... help me out.
Derek Robinson.
Derek Robinson, who I love. I absolutely adore Transmetropolitan. I don't know how I could have forgotten his name for a second. He's going to pick up the art on, I think, on the main run, he said, and he will be doing the art for another...
Yeah, it's going to be another mini-series.
Another mini-series as well, next year, which he refused to tell us about. It's almost like we are podcast has written on our on our foreheads.
Yeah.
I almost said, to be honest with you again, and I didn't. I'm very proud of myself.
Well, to be honest with you, that is the end of podcast number 3.
Oh.
So, it's goodbye from me, Richard.
It's goodbye from me, James. Goodbye.
It's goodbye from me, Nick.
Yeah. Thanks for listening. See you next week.
See you next week.
See you next Tuesday.
We didn't sort out our exit strategy. We didn't sort out our exit strategy. Do you know, I always get Tuesday and Thursday mixed up.
Yeah. One day we'll sort this out, won't we?
We will.
Don't forget the Fiji Geek Addiction at mombcomics.com.
You had to think then.
I did have to think. It's great. We'll see you next week.
Type monkey on my back into Google. It sorts it all out for you. It's fine. Okay. Bye.
Bye.